Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. My guest this week is Michelle Brown, the author of This Girl's Life, Being the Child of a War Veteran. Growing up the child of a troubled war veteran can produce some of the most horrible stories you will ever hear.
He would just torture me all the time, tell me I was ugly, tell me get out of his face. He didn't want to be around me. He couldn't stand to look at me. He really terrified me. He made it unbearable for me to live.
A child may find out decades later that her torment originated in a war she never saw.
My mom would tell me, Michelle, your daddy wasn't like that until he went to the war. She started showing me his medical records from the VA. And that's when I found out why I was being tortured.
A grown woman may find out that her father was kind and good before he went to war.
He wasn't on drugs. He didn't drink. He didn't smoke. He was funny. He laughed all the time. He was such a gentleman, she said. He would bring her flowers. He was just so nice. And she said, all of a sudden, 2 years of the military, and when he came back to her, she said, who is this man? He bring it back to me. She said she didn't know him.
Victims who speak out find that their stories help others as well.
If you don't speak up, you stay a victim. If you speak out and talk, you become a survivor.
Michelle Brown, thank you for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
You're welcome.
As I wrote when I reviewed your book, which is a memoir, it's a nonfiction book, it left me with mixed emotions because I was glad to have read a story that was so well told, but I was horrified by what had happened to you. Maybe we should start with this. Who was your father, and what was his military experience?
Well, my father was Kenneth Otterbrook. He was a Marine in the military. He, I guess, started in when he was 18 or 19 years old, I think my mom told me, when he went in the military. I don't know a whole lot about it because I wasn't born yet.
And this was when, in the 60s?
Yeah, I think it was 1967 or 68, if I'm not mistaken.
Uh-huh, and he joined, and did he go to Vietnam?
Yes, mm-hmm. I think he was in North Vietnam. I think my mother said North Vietnam or something like that.
And so you obviously didn't know the details of that when you were growing up. What was your childhood like? How was your childhood different from many people's childhoods?
Well, my childhood was very different. First of all, I was always scared to get up in the morning because I didn't know what I was going to face with my father. He would torture me all the time, and he told me one day, he said, I don't like you because you look like me. So I didn't, at the time, I was a kid, and I was trying to understand what he was saying to me. I didn't get it. You know, he would try to beat my face all the time so I wouldn't look like him, so he would try to rearrange my face. And then it came to the point that I didn't even like looking at mirrors because I was looking at Eve. I felt like I was looking at Eve when I would look in the mirror. So I was afraid to look in mirrors. My face was always messed up, always had black eyes, always had sores around my face and stuff. And, you know, I was always scared to go to school and tell different people what was going on with me. You know, I was standoffish, you know. I had a real rough childhood.
And so what would he do to you physically?
Physically, he punched me in my face. He would hold my hair. He would pull my hair up and beat me in my face with his fist. And I was only like 7 or 8 years old when this was going on. I think about 6 or 7 or 8, right around that time, you know. He would just torture me all the time, tell me I was ugly, tell me get out of his face. He didn't want to be around me. He couldn't stand to look at me. He really terrified me. He made it unbearable for me to live.
And this was on a daily basis for years, or this was something that was occasional during your childhood?
No, this went on for years, sir. It wasn't even, I wish it was occasional. Then I probably could have dealt with it better.
And in the book, you know, I was actually reminded of techniques that the CIA and others used to harass prisoners. In that you were deprived of food, deprived of sleep, forced to stand endlessly, denied permission to go to the bathroom, in addition to being beaten in ways that, you know, that would leave visible marks. Did those things sort of happen as well, routinely, through your childhood?
Yeah. He would, you know, come a time when he would say, go stand in the corner and hold these books on your head. He'd tie both my hands behind my back, and I had to stand on one leg. I was only like, I think I was like 8 or 9 then, and he put some books on top of my head, and he say, each time one of those books fall, he said, you're going to get whooped, and them books fell all night. And as I'm standing in the corner, I got these bugs crawling all over me, because, you know, we stayed in the projects at the time, and I got bugs crawling all over me, and, you know, and I couldn't. You know, I couldn't keep the books up on me, and then I started urinating on myself because I had to go to the bathroom. He wouldn't let me go to the bathroom. I couldn't eat. I wasn't allowed to eat. He would tell me, you ain't getting nothing to eat today. You know, you're not eating today. So it would come a time when he couldn't stand to see me eat at all. I would have to sneak food, almost like I was in prison. You had to always, I mean, even in prison, they feed you. But I didn't get that. My dad didn't feed me at all. I mean, it was times where each time I did get something to eat, I had to, like, my mom would sneak it to me, or my brothers and sisters would sneak me stuff, or maybe he wasn't at home, and then I could eat, you know, more better. I could eat without worrying about it, but then I had to hurry up and eat because I was always so scared that he would come home, you know, and catch me eating.
Michelle Brown, the book is called This Girl's Life, Being the Child of a War Veteran. Is there lasting physical damage? Have the scars and bruises all healed up?
No. I still have nightmares. I still cry when I talk about it. I think I never got any counseling, so I'm still dealing with that. I get angry. One of my eyes, well, my father beat me in my head so much, so my left eye, you know, it crosses up on me, like it'll get cross-eyed sometimes, and I got teased about that a lot in school, too, because it did that, and it's horrible. I mean, I can't even explain to you the torture and the pain that I went through with him. It was horrible.
I can't imagine. And when did you figure out that this had anything to do with war, with his experience of the military?
To tell you the truth, David, I didn't figure it out until I wrote the book.
And how old were you when you wrote the book?
When I started writing the book is when I figured it out. When he, you know, I think when he passed away in 2000.
So he,
at first, I just thought he was just some mean guy. You know, he was just evil, just mean. But when I started writing the book, my mom would tell me, Michelle, your daddy wasn't like that until he went to the war. And she started explaining that to me. So then she started showing me his medical records from the VA. And that's when I found out why I was being tortured. Why all that happened to me.
And you didn't figure out the war connection until after the year 2000 when you sat down to write about it.
Yeah, when he passed away, I just started figuring out this is what was wrong with him. You know, I started looking at the medical records and seeing that he was homicidal, he was suicidal, he had PTSD, he was bipolar. It was just all these things. I'm like, what the hell was I living with? I had no idea. He didn't share none of his military records with us, so we didn't know what the military was saying about him. We didn't know what medications he was taking, but I know he was being medicated because when I went in his bathroom one day, and I just got sick of it, and I was 11 years old, I'll never forget. I went in his bathroom, and I looked, I'm like, all these pills, I'm like, I'm just going to take them, and I just want to be through with him. I'm tired of him beating on me. I just wanna die. So I started swallowing as many pills as I can get down, and I laid on the floor in his bedroom because I wanted him to find me dead in his bedroom to know that he did that to me. I wanted him to know, this is what you did to me. And it didn't happen like that. I laid down for a second, and my stomach started feeling funny, and I went to the bathroom and threw up every pill. They went down just the way they came up, just the way they went down. They was all whole. None of them digested or anything.
Was your father using drugs or alcohol as well?
All the time. It was different drugs at different times.
The VA had diagnosed PTSD, suicidal, homicidal, bipolar, schizophrenic, personality disorder, depressed, and cocaine addicted.
Yes.
And yet, as far as you know, didn't take any steps to see whether your father might be harming anyone. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is. When he passed away, they told us, we didn't even know he had kids, which we found out later. They lied about, they knew he had children, and they knew he had a wife.
So he told them he had no family, but they knew it wasn't true.
Right.
The other curious thing, probably to many readers of your book, is that you and how many brothers and sisters did you have?
It was three more in the house besides me. Two boys and two girls in the house.
So four children and a mother, and were all five being abused?
Well, basically, this what happened. My mother, she went through her thing with him before. I don't know what all they went through before, you know, because like I said, I wasn't born then. But I got another brother that he's quiet. He's very quiet. He didn't talk much. And then my sister, he liked her because she was considered to him the pretty one, okay? And me, you know, well, you know about me. And my little brother, he didn't mess with him until I left the home, until he put me in a mental institution, and then he started in on his terror of him.
So you have a family of four children and a mother to various degrees being abused. You have a best friend of your father you describe as having witnessed this and being repulsed and abandoning that friendship and never being seen again, and people at your school clearly being aware that something was going on. You describe your father beating you even at school, mm-hmm. to your shame and embarrassment, and the VA being aware that this is going on, and yet nobody did anything. Nobody said anything. Why the complicity? Why the secrecy? Why do you think that this didn't come out, that there was no action from the police department, for example?
The police, me and my sister had, my dad was getting ready to whoop all four of us with this sword that he had. It was a long sword. I mean, this sword was really long, and it was sharp. It was very sharp, and he was getting ready to whoop us with it. And he took it out almost like he was getting ready to fight like a ninja or something. And me and my sister got scared, and we ran out the back door. As he was whooping my two brothers, we ran out the back door, ran down the stairs, and we were caught by the police like maybe, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes later, and they brought us back to the house. And I looked at the police, and I couldn't say anything. I was trying not to say nothing, you know, because I knew that my father was standing there, and he was just going to make an excuse or a lie, you know, because back then, the parents were right and the children were wrong. And I know a lot of people don't know what I'm talking about, because that's the way it was back then. You know, you did what your parents told you to do. If you didn't, they were right and you were wrong. You had neighbors that were whooping you back then. So, you know, that's just the way it was. So when the cops brought us back, I looked at my dad, and he gave me the evilest look. I mean, it scared me to death. And I got out of that police car, and me and my sister got out. We walked up those stairs in terror. We didn't know what was going to happen. And my dad went down, and he's laughing and talking with the police like he's this cool guy, like he's this family man, like he's real nice. And right after they left, I got beat real bad. And I didn't even say anything to the cops, and we still got beat.
And this was, what city was this in?
In Chicago.
In Chicago. Your whole childhood was in Chicago?
Yep.
It's an incredibly disturbing story, but a very important one. We are speaking with Michelle Brown, author of This Girl's Life, Being the Child of a War Veteran, a memoir. This is David Swanson on Talk Nation Radio. Michelle, you eventually, when you sat down to write about this years later and you heard from your mother, you determined that the military experience that your father had was a part of this. What were you able to learn about what he went through?
Well, my mother started telling me that he wasn't on drugs, he didn't drink, he didn't smoke, he was funny, he laughed all the time, he was such a gentleman, she said. He would bring her flowers, he was just so nice. And she said all of a sudden, 2 years of the military, and when he came back to her, she said, who is this man? He bring it back to me. She said she didn't know him. She said he was totally different. He had totally changed. He started drinking, smoking, cursing, using drugs, he was having nightmares. She said one day he got up in the middle of the night and just came outside, and she didn't know where he was, and she said it was snow outside. He was standing there in his underwear, burning his uniform, looking up at the sky. So whatever happened to him in there, he didn't like it himself. Yeah. To burn his uniform.
You describe in the book learning from one of his buddies who had been in the war as well, okay, that he had to kill men, women, and children. Is that accurate? Or do you think that
yes,
he did have
to
do that?
That's what I was told.
So in fact, beating women and children is not as bad as what he had to do.
Oh, no.
In the war.
But I've almost died. He almost took my wife a few times. I can honestly tell you that. I almost died a few times because it was times where I was beaten and I was asleep. And I woke up and I'm like, what the, you know, I didn't know what was going on. And I wake up and this man is beating me. I mean, beat me really severe. So I couldn't walk for at least 3 days. My head was busted, all in my sleep. And I'm asleep. So it came to a point I didn't sleep in the house. I would sleep one eye open because I was so scared that what if he come in here, you know, and I'm asleep and he do this again. You know, I was terrified not being able to wake up in the morning and you don't know what you're gonna face. You're gonna face this man when you wake up in the morning. This is who you're gonna face. That's why I sent you that picture of me when I was a kid. So you could see the mark I had on my neck where he had almost slit my throat at one time. You know, with knives and stuff that he had around the house. It was horrible. I mean, I don't know how I survived that.
There's a picture on the back of the book of your father and a picture on the front that looks better than the one you were just talking about.
Right.
Who is that with you on the front cover?
Oh, that's my husband, my supporter.
And he's very supportive of...
Very, very. Once I had met my husband, I had told my husband, I didn't tell him everything that my father had did to me, because we was like boyfriend and girlfriend at the time. I just told him that how scared I was of my father and that he was whooping me all the time and I couldn't stand to be around him. So my husband kind of, you know, kicked in and like, you know, started taking me away from the house. We would go places and do things. And plus, by that time, my daddy was so strung out on drugs. He was barely at home anyway, so it turned out for the better.
There was also, in terms of what he went through in Vietnam, there was also something about rats. What was that involved?
He had his foot bitten off. He had his big toe bitten off by a rat, so he didn't have, I don't think he had a big toe, because it was supposed to be bitten off by a rat, so he said, I don't know. Mm. So...
And Agent Orange was mentioned as well. Did he actually get Agent Orange?
Oh yeah.
On him.
Actually, he was paid for it. They paid him. The VA paid him for that, and we didn't see a damn of that money. We sent him starving, eat mayonnaise sandwiches, and he had over $100,000 for being sprayed with the Agent Orange sprayed on him. I found that out later too.
And I guess during the war, he would send to your mother by letter disturbing photos from Vietnam.
Yes, he did. He sent, and she said she would throw up and throw them things in the garbage. He always sent her photos of people head blowed off, women and kids on the ground dead, she said. And she didn't tell me that till later. All this stuff I'm telling you now, she told me that, you know, around the time I was writing the book, you know, that he sent all these crazy photos, and she said it was just sickening. So...
But even when you were growing up, in the book you say that he would sometimes, he would say that he couldn't love his kids because they might die, and that you looked like the enemy and things like that.
What he told my mom. My mom asked him, she'd say, why do you treat your children so bad? He said, because I can't love them. The Army taught me not to love anybody. And he'd say, because if they, you know, if they die, I don't want to be attached to them. If they die, you know, it was crazy. It was stupid. You know, it just didn't make any sense. It never did. It never made sense to me.
It shouldn't. It doesn't make sense to me either.
Right.
And what has been your experience since you've begun speaking out about this? What responses have you had from people?
Well, a lot of people are coming out now. You know, I see I'm watching TV, a lot of people are coming out talking about, a lot of the war veterans are talking about how they got PTSD and how they don't love their families, how they couldn't love their families, and, you know, it's a lot of talk about that. I haven't had a lot of negative people saying anything to me. Mostly people are just, like, saying they're sorry, and they hate that my father had done that to me, you know, and it happened to them, too. You know, a lot of people are coming out telling me about the abuse that happened to them, and, you know, when their father was in the war, and I was shocked because it happened to a lot of people, and people just you know, balled it up, didn't want to talk about it. They don't want to talk about it. You know, everybody's trying to make it like it's some secret. Nobody wants to talk about it, but I can't keep it in any longer because I could be helping somebody. And that's what I'm trying to do.
Helping somebody else who's
right.
going
helping
through the same thing.
Right, their families and the war veterans. Helping, you know, just, man, I'm trying to help. That's it.
So you would encourage others, if they can, to speak out as well?
That's right. Speak out and get the help that you need because it could be going on in homes right now. And it's not just about the war. It's domestic violence, period.
I can't help wondering, having, you know, we're learning these stories from Vietnam 40 years later. Are we going to be learning similar stories out of Iraq and Afghanistan in the 2040s? This is what I'm worried about.
Yeah.
Do you? I don't know what your position is on wars. Clearly, you think that veterans need to have more help, and their families need to have more help. Do you think also we ought to be attempting to produce fewer veterans in the first place?
I think that, I'm be honest with you, I think that it needs to stop all the way. I think they need to stop these wars because it's affecting so many people. It's affecting our lives. We have good men and women until they go over there. When they come back, they're totally different. You know, and since the stories that I've been hearing about the war that's going on right now, not my experience, but from what I'm hearing about now, you know, it needs to stop. It seriously needs to stop. It needs to, and if they are going to do it, then they need to get the help. You can't make people stop going to fight the war, but if they're going to go over there and fight, you need to get the help when you come back.
But you would recommend against signing up if people have another choice
I'm
in
totally
their life.
Against it. Totally against it.
In the book, you talk about your dad calling you upstairs and making you answer "sir" and "yes, sir" as in the Army, and he would order you around. As in the Army, is that how you thought of it then, or how you learned to look back on it?
I learned when I look back on it now. I wonder, you know, now I know why we had to say yes, sir, and no, sir, and stand like soldiers, and you know, I could never understand all of that, but that's the reason, you know, like later on, like I said, later on, I found out. I'm like, is that why he was so deaf on us? I mean, when you come in the house. When you come from school, you have to come in the house, you have to say, "Hello, sir." You know, it's like that. And then even though you don't get no response, he won't say anything back. He'll look at you real evil and turn his head, you know, with those. He had red eyes. I never forget. They were red.
Really? And I wonder how the experience of writing about this and talking about it and sharing it with other people has affected you in that when you wrote the book, you wrote that you hated your father, and that hate is such a strong word, you write, but I did. I really wanted to love him, but the Vietnam War ruined him and his family. Do you still hate him?
I don't know how to answer that. I think the Christian in me, you know, I got to say that... I don't want to say hate, you know what I'm saying? But the child in me says hate. So, you know, I don't really know how to answer that. I can't strongly answer that. But he apologized to me before he died. I had the chance then to ask him all the questions of why he did this to me and why was I tortured, why was I beaten. And the fear in me was so strong. I couldn't get it out to ask him. I was still terrified of him, even as an adult, because I thought, if I asked him that, what if he try to kill me now because I'm asking about that, even though he was apologizing. It was just that fear. That fear was always there. So, you know, like I said, I really don't know how to answer that.
Even after he died, you wrote, you were still afraid of him in mm-hmm. nightmares, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to imagine a child having to go through that level of fear. There's always a balance that we have to seek in our society between protecting children and unnecessarily interfering in people's lives. But my impression is that you would have been better off had your school or your police or social workers in your area sought to step in more. What do you think? How should we be balancing concerns now that that children in the privacy of some home next door might be being tortured the way you were?
Well, David, I'm going to tell you like this. They have to step up and talk. They got to start stepping up and talking. Otherwise, you probably won't never know. Like in my family, people never, ever knew. They saw the scars on me, and I cried out to so much of my man that I wanted to tell somebody. I even think that one time I threw off a hint, I think, to somebody once, just to keep from bringing out, you know, saying, this is what's going on with me. This is what my daddy is doing to me. Because my daddy would always threaten us and say, if y'all tell on me, ain't nothing nobody going to do to me. He said, because I'm crazy, and the VA knew it. He said, if I kill y'all, only thing the VA going to do is put me in a mental institution, and I'm going to be right back on the streets. He said, so y'all can't do nothing to me. That's what he would say all the time. He said that I would never forget that. And that's the fear that we kept, that we never opened our mouth, because he was crazy. And we knew that he was going, that he was, well, I didn't know, but my mom knew that he was going to the VA hospital. And then one day I asked my mom, I said, Mom, what is he talking about when Daddy said that the VA know he crazy, he'd kill us and the VA won't do nothing? She said, no, your daddy go to the VA hospital. She still didn't tell me what it was. She said, your daddy go to the VA hospital, and if he kill us, then ain't nothing they're going to do. They just going to lock him up in the mental institution because they know he's crazy. That's what she would say. And I said, oh, my God. I said, oh, my God. And that kept that fear there with her, with me, and all the rest of us. We stayed, tried to stay away from him, tried to keep him calm in the house and everything, but nothing never worked. We could never please him. Nothing.
I have to say, Michelle Brown, that I've read a lot of accounts in recent years of torture and abuse, and yours seems to me the most horrific. The story that I could least imagine myself having been able to survive, and yet here you are, having survived it, written about it, speaking out about it, and clearly communicating the danger to others. I think we all owe you a debt of gratitude. Is there any advice you want to give to people out there?
Yes, I want to say this. Please, people, speak up. If you don't speak up, you stay a victim. If you speak out and talk, you become a survivor. So start speaking up. Don't let no one keep you a victim. Speak up. It's time to get these people and get them arrested or whatever needs to be done. They cannot keep hurting you. And that's my message.
It's an important one. Michelle Brown, the book is This Girl's Life, Being the Child of a War Veteran, a memoir. This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, engineered by Christiane Brown in Reno, Nevada, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. Until next time.